Hi, and welcome to Rule of Carnage. This is a series of conversations, videos, podcasts between myself. I am Glenn Ford, a games
Hi.
designer and developer, and this guy, Mike Hutchinson, he's also a games designer and developer.
It's true.
We come on this channel and we chat about designing better miniatures games, but we also play games and one of the games that I played, well, a few of the games actually that I played around sort of the Christmas period, popped some thoughts into my head about an oppositional sort of problem, stretch points, I guess, in games design, and specifically that I would like to chat about with Mike today, which is the pull between giving players closure through a game. And giving them freedom through a game. Now, I'm sort of, I think, of the opinion that people lie on a pole between wanting those two sorts of things. I think I was saying to Mike earlier that it's like my feeling in life a lot of the time is that, you don't ultimately get closure in real life very often, that you don't necessarily know whether you're sort of doing the right thing and following the right path. Certainly, if you don't have some sort of higher belief structure, it's quite difficult sometimes to believe that what you're doing is right with a capital R. And one of the things that's lovely, I often find, is that in the game, you go through a game and it says to you're right, this is right, you're on the right path.
Right, you draw a magic circle, and within that magic circle, you get to say, "Yes, I finished. This was done, and it was good. The outcome was positive, and no further activity can change that outcome. That is now good forever."
And it's like I've been playing a game recently called Sable, which is a digital video game. And it's an exploration game. It's a sandbox game. But you'll be sort of going through this desert on this sort of speeder bike, and then you'll see like a little odd object, like a fallen over bit of wood. And you go and it's sort of leant up on a rock, and you walk up the bit of wood, and then you happen to see another bit like a couple of rocks up, and you've got, and it's like, okay, I know I'm meant to be here because it's giving me these little signs. There's a bit of wood leading from one rock to another. That doesn't just happen in this game. I am on the right path. And I was playing it actually thinking at one point, I was actually playing it thinking, this is a game that likes me and wants me to do well. This
Yeah.
game is my friend. It's like, to me, it's like the opposite of like the From Software games who want
Where
you
the
to
game
play it.
hates you and wants to kill you at all moments.
Absolutely. And I was just sort of playing this
Get out
game.
of my game, player.
Yeah, and I was playing this game and I went around the corner. I wasn't quite sure if I was in the right place. And there was just this little thing that went, oh, yeah, that wouldn't be there if I hadn't gone the right way down this sort of little maze thing. And I followed it through and it's like, yeah, this thing wants me to do well. And it's like that. It's like whether it's no a fully open world game or whether it's like just a game that goes, well, here's the end of the level. Bink, there you go. You were right. It gives you closure. They give us goals. They give these structures that are often sort of missing from real life. And then one of the other games I was playing over the Christmas period is the very splendid Dorf Romantik board game, winner of the Spiel des Jahres this year. And it made me think sort of about the opposite end of this thing, and the thing, the end of it that I don't find as attractive. Although in Dorf Romantik is really, really good, and I'm very much enjoying the game. And in that, there are no win conditions, there are no lose conditions. And you see that reasonably often in like solo games, but even then, when it's a solo game and it's usually like, get your score, then try and beat your score in your next game. Dorf Romantik doesn't even say that. It just says, play this game, get a score, feel how you feel about that. Go on with your life, write the score down. And there's this little track thing you're meant to go around and you unlock like little things and it has little goals. But it just doesn't care about how you do, or don't do. You cannot fail, you cannot lose. It doesn't actually ask you to care about whether you scored better or worse than last time you played. It doesn't give
But
you a ranking of
each
scores.
playing of the game has a concluding moment. Or do you just stop playing at some point?
You run out of tiles. You run out of tiles, and then you count up your score, and that's the score you've got, and it's a number. And it's even to the point where, like, it has this little track where you get a certain number of points, and you fill in, like, points on this track. But it's like a casual video game in that respect, in that you can't not fill in all the points. If you keep playing, inevitably they'll all get filled in.
So this is not going to be a revelation to you, but perhaps the context is like this is how most campaign progression systems work in war games. Like, I don't play a game of like I'll go with Frostgrave because it's particularly acute in Frostgrave. Like, who wins a game of Frostgrave is deeply unclear. What we both win is the opportunity to progress our gang, and we win the fact that some of our models are dead, and therefore we get to roll on the injury table, or we get the opportunity to buy new ones, and we win treasure, and we like what we do is we enjoy the experience of moving through another cycle of this progression system. And there's plenty of miniature games where the actual closure of the game results is borderline insignificant. You know, how well you did in terms of collecting your treasure will affect a little bit how well the sort of, you know, how tasty the cookies are you get afterwards. But it seems to me that that is a very similar sort of non-closing loop where, you know, at a meta level, there is no end state. There is no closure. There's no magic circle. You did the right thing. It's just we keep playing games until we stop playing games of Frostgrave and I have too many scrolls or whatever. And a lot of campaign systems will bake in, like, you know, oh, when you get to level 20, you have to retire or, you know, blah, blah, blah. But I think that those are mostly there because, as we have talked at extensive length, like there is a design problem, which is that endless campaigns don't end. So how do you end an endless campaign? And it's interesting because what you're suggesting here is no, don't end an endless campaign. That's not the point. The point is to keep playing until you choose to stop playing it. Like, it doesn't need an end state. It's another way of looking at the challenge of endless campaigns.
Well, yeah, I mean, this, I suppose this is the nub of, like, yeah, what I want to talk about is that I genuinely don't know sort of which is the right way to go. And I say this as somebody who really, really wants closure when I'm playing a game. I mean, you know, I'm the
I think that's
person.
also because of the player persona you are. Like, you can't complete, you know, some proportion of your enjoyment of games is completing the like play to prove loop. And you can't find out if the decisions that you made were effective unless there is a moment where the game goes, yes, well done. You've made effective decisions.
Well,
Congratulations.
it all the game goes, no, you fool, you didn't
Yeah,
make
yeah.
effective decisions.
Either
That's
way,
why.
you get some confirmation that you did a thing and the thing
Yeah.
is done.
I mean, yeah, I mean, you know, I'm the idiot who played through, like, the whole of the End Times, like, campaign from end to end over multiple years because I really value that sort of putting a full stop at the end of something. You know, I just, yeah, you know,
I needed closure. I played all of the End Times.
yeah, and that was not necessarily a pleasant experience for the most part of it. And it's
No,
like,
but it happened.
and even saying that, and I think saying that partly because, like, having played Dorf Romantic, and it is so deftly done, and even whilst playing it, and, like, everything in it, genuinely everything in that box is absolutely pitch perfect. You know, I'm playing it and I was packing it away. I'll tell you an example of quite how wonderfully pitch perfect it is. There's a little bit that tells you how to pack it away correctly in the various slots within the inlay, because the inlay is perfectly judged for exactly what you need, and that's just delightful. Even as I'm packing it that way, I'm thinking, okay, this has happened. This has won the SDJ. This is genuinely, I think, quite mold breaking. Somebody else is going to do this, and it is going to be absolute hot garbage. It's going to be awful, and there's going to
Right.
be a few of these that are going to be terrible because this is a very fine needle to thread. And yeah, I think I'm sort of on one end of that scale, but I've been sort of enjoying games that value
Well, I think, yeah, I mean,
freedom over closure.
it might be that games of this nature, which can please even a person such as you, may be extraordinarily rare, but that there will be, less successful versions of this game for which people on the other spectrum will be like, oh yeah, this is awesome. This is the kind of thing that I like and that there hasn't been enough of, which is like games that aren't obsessed with, making sure we finish and making sure we know who wins and, making sure we are forced to learn the game better and do better the next time. And, games that are focused more on, the pleasure of being inside that magic circle rather than the pleasure of leaving it.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think it's super interesting, Frostgrave as an example, because even Frostgrave has that little sort of optional thing where you can ascend up to godhood or whatever it is. And oh, if you want, you can play trying to gain this thing, and when somebody gains it, then you can end the campaign. Or you could just not, and you could just have them ascend to godhood and then have like a new apprentice rise up and keep going through with that. And yeah, I think it's interesting, and I think sort of I've often, when designing campaigns, and casually and for friends and things, always wanted to put an end point on the campaign, primarily because people drift off from campaigns. Eventually, however good your campaign is, eventually people will drift off. And I want it to end before people have drifted away, when at least like 60% of the players are still regularly playing it. I want there to be an end point that's satisfying to everybody and finish it out and walk away. And I guess the question is like, is there a value to having it such that no, the end point is when everyone walks away? Because again, I've often seen really like not very good games have something like an end condition of keep playing until everybody doesn't want to play anymore, or you get bored, whatever. And it's like, well, that's the worst ending condition ever, to say keep playing until you hate my game, until you've had thoroughly enough of it, you couldn't stand to stick around any longer, and have that be your final thought about it when you tie a bow in and walk off. It's
Well,
like,
I mean, we had an adjacent conversation recently about like how this was in the Discord. It was about like how long should a game be, and are longer games or shorter games better? And there's a sort of there is, I think, a general trend to consider like a shorter, punchier game to be a better game. And there were some really, interesting counterpositions on that, which were just like, well, the right length of game is the game that fills up the amount of space that I wanted to play the game for. And like the perfect game would be entirely elastic to if I had 30 minutes or 3.5 hours, it would be elastic to that space. And I would tell the game for how long I wish to have fun, and it would continue to pour fun at me for exactly the amount of time that I wanted it to. And so I suppose this maybe suggests that if you can find a loop that is, it's enjoyable to luxuriate in the machine, and the machine doesn't get overly tedious, but the machine doesn't also force an end condition, then maybe we can have a 30-minute blast of the, sitting in the hot tub, or we can sit in the hot tub for 3.5 hours if that's how long we want to. And so rather than saying sit in the hot tub until you're really uncomfortably warm and you just want to go and have a shower, it says, well, pick how long you're going to hang out in this space. The game will support you for that long. And I think a number of games try to do that with force sizes, where it's like, well, look, if you want a 3-hour game, play with big armies. And that does work to a degree. To a degree. Like it changes some things, and certainly it makes larger hobby demands, but it's also quite unpredictable in all the same ways. So I think that maybe that like if there was a way of delivering that like, how long does this game take to play? Well, it takes exactly the amount of time you want it to play, and it always functions accurately under that requirement. Like, you could you even make a game that had closure that operated under those constraints?
Yeah, I know it is an interesting, I think it's an interesting subject, like in relation to Minis games particularly. It's interesting you bring up campaigns, because it's like Minis games always have like this closed unit of the actual tabletop game where you play, you play, you play, you play, bang, you get a result of some level or degree, And it's sort of hopefully reasonably satisfying.
One of the weirdly discreet things about them, actually.
Yes, no, yeah, in many ways. And then you get campaigns. And the thing about campaigns is that by and large, they don't get finished. They get started, but they don't get finished. And everyone drifts off at some point, and you don't get that sort of bullet point ending to them. Which I don't know if that's why I'm so obsessed with campaigns, ironically. And it's
White whale of campaign closure.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And it is interesting, like you say there about like a game you can play until you choose to stop for exactly as long as you want to choose to play it, because that's most video games these days. Now that I don't have to insert a tape into my Spectrum, most video games, I click a button and I save and it's just done. And even like, you know, permadeath roguelikes, I click a button and it saves and then it dumps me out of the game, but it doesn't force me to keep playing until I get to the end of the level or whatever it happens to be. You know, it's fairly...
Or they politely put save blobs.
Yes. Or you go.
I'm thinking of Dead Space because we just finished talking about horror. Like,
yeah.
Part of the horror of Dead Space is I don't know when the next save box is going to be available.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Yeah. A lot of horror games, like, you know, the Resident Evils, famously, it's like, how far is it to the next typewriter? Can I get back to the typewriter? Do I have enough save reels to be
right? And so that's like a micro closure loop. But yeah, like I think the general case is true. It's like in digital gaming, I choose how long I play for.
Yeah, and it's like there's a game called Time Stories, a board game that I very much enjoyed, and it's a sort of narrative, card-based, sort of choose-your-own-adventure-y kind of a game. And that has a system so that you can save the game halfway through. Like, it has a very convoluted inlay in the box. And it's like, oh, you can put all of the cards in these very specific slots. So you'll be able to know exactly where you were when you come back to it. And so you can save halfway through a story. Or you can be a nutcase and sit there for about 6 hours playing through the full story from end to end, because you're never quite sure whether you're going to stop at a nice stopping point, and you may as well just do the next turn. And how effective it is on the tabletop and how achievable it is on the tabletop, whether tabletop games, whether miniatures games specifically, can give you an actual at-the-table, open-world, free experience. And whether that matters in relation to the fact that, like, list building is very free. Making and painting miniatures is incredibly free form. You know, is it possible to then create a tabletop minis game that's a free form, giving you freedom elements as opposed to?
I'm fascinated by that question. That's a really good way of framing it. And I guess a couple things it brings to mind. One is an infamous and rambling conversation we had about whether your game is a game or whether it's a process, because I think this is to a degree, like, if you strip away the closure, is what you're left with essentially a toy rather than a game? And we get back to some of the fundamentals definitions of that. But one definition that I hold quite dear is there was a I can't remember the name of the company right now, but they made mobile games that were targeted at kids, and the CEO of that developer was extremely thoughtful about his audience. And what he said was, we don't make games, we make toys. Now, they looked like games. They're like, someone's going to know what I'm talking about with this, but like, you run a pet shop or you run like a pet barber, and like, pets turn up and you can refer them, whatever. But the point is that he was very clear that what's critical is that parents and kids are able to have control over this experience, such that what is happening in their household, in their family environment, is always sacrosanct. And so there is no save, there's no levels, there's no completion moment. What it is it's a toy that when you stop playing it and put it down, it retains the exact state that when you pick it up again, you're exactly where you were before. So there's never had to be an argument between mum and daughter of like, oh, I need you to come off that, it's bedtime, and like, oh, but I'm going to lose my progress and blah 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 blah. I just need to get to the end of this. Like, no, you put it down, you pick it up, it's always exactly the same. And that difference between he called that the difference between a toy and a game. And I don't know if that's definitionally defensible in every way, but like for me, it's a useful mental model. And so I guess like the thing that is entirely elastic to the amount of time we have to play with it is a toy, is a set of toys, and we just choose to keep playing with the toys until our time up for playing has ended. And so I guess like maybe just hooking back to that like typewriter thing, like maybe there has to be enough micro closure loops so that that can sustain itself over a good amount of time. So if we did want to pay 3.5 hours, it would need to have enough closure loops in it that we're like, oh yeah, okay, we did a thing. Yeah, okay, we did a thing. We did a thing. Because I can imagine like an adventure game. Like if you took Relic Blade, which is like a 15 to 30 minute game, and you sort of placed it in an endless set of wilderness encounters, like you used maybe the wilderness encounter charts from D&D or something, and you had a big 6x4 table and you just moved around the table and sort of endlessly generated new local encounters, and your guys just kept moving around and blah blah blah. Like maybe with a healing system, like we could just keep playing that for as long as we wanted until we're like, ah, do you know what, let's not generate another 15 minute long encounter. That's enough for me.
No, I mean, absolutely. You could play almost any minis game endlessly by just saying everything that dies comes back on as reinforcements, and we'll just keep a tally of what each person's killed, and then we can play for an infinite period of time. And when we choose to end, we can still like find out who won.
Yeah, I mean, there's a difference between you can play every miniature game infinitely and you can enjoy every miniature game
That's
infinitely. Yeah.
exactly what was going to be the end of my sentence, is, whether the infinite rolling road of playing it can be satisfying, how you make it satisfying, how you make it worth, because it's like occasionally you get people who like for charity or whatever do like a 24-hour long game of X, and they do it by just having things respawn and come on as reinforcements infinitely, and nobody at the end of those 24 hours is going like, well, that's one of the best games I've ever played. They're crying, begging for it to finish, please. But yeah, the idea of having a game that a minis game that has like a true level of freedom to it, that doesn't, in some way, doesn't care where you go and when you finish and how you finish, that is obviously like a full sandbox feels too much, but a sandbox-like experience, is that a possibility? Is that something to want or care about? Is that just like seeking something seeking it because it's hard.
I mean, it's my opinion, having not thought about it for that amount of time, but it's my opinion that you need some moments of completion or completion analogues. And, I think that's a narrative necessity. And one of the things that games do so elegantly is that they force narrative conclusions through mechanical resolution systems. And, when we play games of role-playing games, we have to ma more directly manufacture cliffhangers, and we have to find ways to pace to the end of the session with the time that we've got. And when we're playing tabletop games, like those moments, those cliffhangers, like they are manufactured by the system, and they tend to be more predictably at like, turn four or turn five or whatever. Or in a game like Arkham Horror, it's like, I don't know how long this is going to take, but like there's going to be a cliffhanger towards the end. But if we have to stop in the middle of it, it's kind of like we're not really anywhere, we're just sort of in the middle of it. And so I think in order for a game to continue to be interesting over a long period of time, it's going to have to be fractal, and it's going to have narratively interesting beats in it, because otherwise it's just like endlessly waiting rather than and I don't know, I haven't played the Spiel des Jahres winner myself. Like, that sounds like we run out of tiles, so there is an interim beat.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And I think sort of thinking back and relating this, as we must do with all things, back to Gaslands, is that, you know, all hail mighty Gaslands. I play a lot of, you know, demo games of Gaslands with people at conventions who have unknown periods of time and, you know, don't know how long a game of Gaslands takes or whatever, and I can judge pretty well, but not that perfectly. But the thing with Gaslands is you can say, we'll call it at the next gate. Wherever you are in the race, you can say, next gate wins, and now you know you're going to finish in like a very specific period of time. And so it's a game that has a Death Race of Gaslands has like levels, has like mini levels where you can stop at any gate you like. And also, I know people who play games of Gaslands with more than one lap, mad fools that they are. You know, so that's a game that I think, and we've talked to you before about, I think that the one of the powerful things about Gaslands is it has very specific and satisfying gameplay loops, you know, within it, that work in very specific ways and satisfy very, very specific sort of desires. And I think if there is, yeah, I think you're right. If there is a game that intends to just be free form and going on forever, I think the mistake would be to try and make it a sort of sandbox in that, okay, here's a tabletop and here are some tables that populate it, but instead to go, okay, here are the beats of what happened, and you can generate more beats if you want to, but here's the discrete thing, and here's a table that can replicate infinitely if you choose to keep playing. But it is not just a free form world in which you adventure. It is a thing with these discrete moments that you could box it out to.
Yeah. And I suppose like the last thing that's probably worth considering is like the victory imperative angle on this, which is like, I can imagine saying like, this is an endless dungeon crawl game where, you know, hey Glenn, should we like call it a level 12 tonight? Like, yeah, we've probably got time to get level 12, and we don't quite get there, so we call it level 10 and it's fine. But like, if we're playing a game of Gaslands, we're like, well, let's call it at gate 6, and you're like, okay, we're running out of time, we'll call it at gate 5. Like, maybe I win if we call it at gate 5, but you were definitely going to win if we call it at gate 6. And so the victory imperative sort of interacts with this, insofar as, are we talking about a game that has closure from the point of view of there is a winner? And so the point here is, well, it's a hot tub, there's no winner, it's just a thing which we just enjoy for enough time. Because I think even there, like the places that I would naturally strive for, like they still kind of output a winner, because it's just like, well, we'll just have an elastic victory condition. We'll make sure it's a system where wherever you call the victory condition, it still makes sense. But then maybe that dungeon crawl is, you know, maybe the best example that I can come up with, which is like, well, whether or not, like, we'll quit as soon as the first person hits level 12 in this dungeon, or the first, you know, as soon as we clear out dungeon level 12, like, no one wins. We're collaborating. That's a collaborative experience.
Yeah, no, totally. Dorf Romantik, if I hadn't mentioned it, is a cooperative game. And it's literally at the end, the score is just a number that you are given that has literally no meaning or purpose whatsoever. And it's even to the point where at the end of every game, you get extra tokens, so you will score more on your next game because you're literally given extra scoring opportunities. So the idea of not advancing as you go through it, even if you don't genuinely like internally learn anything, is bizarre, and yet it's very satisfying for some odd reason. And I think it's like, it's a really interesting implementation of those sort of casual tile layer games, which is exactly what it is. Dorf Romantik was originally a video game, and they made it into the tabletop game, and I quite liked the digital game. You know, it's not my favorite of that sort of thing, but it's quite a nice sort of little time killer. I thought, they're never going to manage this on the tabletop, it's not going to be the same. And it's exactly the same experience. It's exactly the same sort of lovely little, this is
So
fun.
I guess maybe there's an angle to pick at there, which is like one of the reasons that Gaslands and that game are pleasurable is that there's a tactile pleasure. Like that's one of the things that's nice about video games that, you know, even pointless, kind of endless, not pointless, like conclusionless things, it's like they're enjoyable because it's enjoyable to manipulate. Like I'm thinking of Sim City, for example. Like Sim City, I can't remember having an end condition. It probably did, but like I build a city and I watch it sort of bubble up and down, and occasionally a nuclear reactor explodes and I have to fix that, and you know.
I mean, but at the same time, it's like we have a friend who, if I give you a game where every couple of turns you have to roll on a D9000 table, play that endlessly, just delightedly.
Right, but that I think is because he gets an aesthetic pleasure from handling that mechanic. And so like a very tactile example of that is like there is a direct aesthetic pleasure in manipulating the Gaslands templates and getting them right or getting them wrong. And there's like a micro sort of closure of like, was that the right template? In the same way that like arranging physical kind of cardboard equipment can be an enjoyable tactile experience, just as it can be like, you know, fitting puzzles together, whether the puzzle is done digitally on an iPad or physically using little cardboard jigsaw pieces. Like a jigsaw can be a pleasant sort of process that you go through. So I guess maybe that's it, as well as like an element to this hot tub luxuriation game has to be that like each moment that I'm going through, it's like it's a pleasurable handling experience. Otherwise, I wouldn't want to keep handling it for as long as I want to.
Absolutely, yeah. I mean, I think that this is an interesting idea. I definitely think I'm of the opinion that people lay somewhere on a continuum between wanting closure and wanting freedom. And I do think that those are things that any given game design has to choose, because I think they are in some ways directly oppositional. And I think there's a limit like how far you can pull it with a minis game. But I'm interested in the idea of pushing the envelope and trying to push it further than it might appear to be like accepting of. I'd love to hear other people's opinions on how far those two things can be pushed around in minis game design. If anybody out there is fiddling around with these ideas, I think some people in the Discord have sort of suggested the idea of pushing one or two of them, but it's a weird concept, I think. Please drop down into the comments section and tell me about in what way you're interested about playing with it, what you've been trying to tweak, how you've been achieving these things. If you do go down into the comments section, please hit the like and subscribe buttons to make us very happy. And then swing by the Discord, because I do think this is one of those conversations that can be kicked around a bit and fiddled with, and hopefully pop up something inspiring for people. Follow me on social media. Follow Mike on social media. Eventually he'll start listening. Check out Mike's Patreon in order to encourage this to keep happening in the future. But for now, from this episode of Rule of Carnage, I think that can be a thank you and goodbye. So, bye bye. Bye bye. Bye bye.
Thank you. Goodbye.
Goodbye. That's good because it gives people closure.